Sometimes I feel a little bit like the Grinch from Dr. Seuss's book about how the Grinch stole Christmas. I get a little fed up with noise, and there's that part where the Grinch, now what he doesn't like is people singing Christmas carols, but for me it's just sort of the noise in general, and I feel like, oh, the noise, 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 you know? And I live with some less than silent people who make some noise on occasion. And so usually long about 4:30, 5 o'clock or so, when I'm washing dishes or making dinner, and so there's water running or something happening like that, and my daughter is chit-chatting, and I can't even really hear what she's saying, but she just keeps talking because she's so excited about something. And there's some music playing in the background or something like that. And I finally just get so frazzled that I'm like, ah! Just stop for a second. Just everybody, just quiet. There's too much noise. And we live in a world that is frenzied by noise. There's always something going on, even when we do turn off the music or the television that's on in the background, because some people really like to have that background noise. It doesn't frazzle them quite the way it frazzles me. Even when we do quiet our voices for a little while or put the kids to sleep or take a few moments by ourselves. There's a fan running. There's a refrigerator humming in the background. There's the sound of cars going by on the street. There's always some noise going on in our lives. In the passage that I just read, the translation from Hebrew, they don't know what to make of the noise or lack thereof that Elijah hears. And I think we don't know what to make of quiet or whisper, or hardly a sound, or as one translation says, the sound of sheer silence, whatever that is. We don't know what that means anymore, because we're surrounded by the noise, noise, noise. Kind of sound like the Grinch with a little gravel in there. Sometimes even our attempts to be holy, our attempts to be sacred, are filled with noise, with activity, with music, which is not a bad thing, and with spoken prayer, which is not a bad thing, with sermons, which are usually not a bad thing, and with you know, sights and sounds and smells and stimulation all around us, trying to create some sort of overpowering, overwhelming, awe-inspiring experience. I just returned late last night, very late last night. I'll get into that in a second. But I returned late last night from the New England Annual Conference session. And twice as many people as meet in Troy Annual Conference. So we have 1,200 Methodists at this point on the campus of Gordon College. And we met for essentially one full day and two little half days on either end of it. And tried to do all the work and all the legislation and all the meeting and all the interaction and all the worshiping that 600 people did in a full day, longer than that, typically. And guess what? It was a little bit hectic. There was quite a bit of noise. And what there was not quite a bit of was moments of quiet. And so even though we worshiped, even though we heard a phenomenal keynote speaker, even though we heard a really excellent preacher who was the winner of this year's award for preaching excellence, even though we heard a fantastic choir, a couple of fantastic choirs from different parts of the conference, even though we talked about the things of God and we visioned about what the church should be, it was hard to find holy moments because it was so packed. It was so filled with activity and sights and sounds and things always happening and the noise, noise, noise. And our whole lives are like that, filled with the stuff we go through and the stuff we worry about and the noise all around us. I'm going to tell a true story, and I don't want anyone to be alarmed or freak out because my husband did plenty of that already. So I leave this annual conference session, and it's about 5 o'clock at night on a Saturday, and I get on the highway, 128, just north outside North Boston, and I'm on the highway for not 10 minutes. And there's a little bit of congestion. And of course, because it's Boston, people drive like on top of each other. And so traffic's moving along, and they're driving on top of each other, and I'm in the fast lane, which means I'm going about 45, and the car in front of me stops suddenly, and I stop suddenly, about a foot or two off his bumper, and I look in the rearview mirror, and I brace myself, because the car behind me is not stopping suddenly. And so there's a tremendous screech of tires, oh the noise, and crash of metal and plastic, oh the noise. And my car gets thrown into the, I say car, truck in front of me, big pickup truck in front of me. And of course the young man who's behind me gets out and he's all upset and he's looking at his car and you can see him, you know, his car's got some pretty hefty damage to the front end. And you can see him just like, you know, the dollar signs adding up in his brain as he looks at this and realizes that any damage to his car and my car and the pickup truck in front of me is going to be his fault. And he's, you know, he's kind of... And if you want to see a 25-year-old man nearly pee his pants, you be an 8-month pregnant lady and step out of the car that he just hit. So here I come out of the car, you know, and I stand up, you know, which takes a few moments, unfold myself in all of my massive belly glory, and his entire face, like, implodes. And he's just like, oh, my God. Dollar signs forgotten, and he's just like, I've killed a baby or something. I'm the most awful person in the world, and he's tripping all over. I'm so sorry. Are you okay? Of course, they tell you in an accident never to say, oh, I'm okay. You're supposed to say, well, we'll have to wait and see so that you can sue the person later. So I'm trying not to say I'm okay, but at the same time, here's this poor, like, you know, man my age or younger who really just needs some assurance. I'm like, we'll get me checked out. It's going to be all right. And I did. I went to the hospital. My blood pressure wasn't even high. I don't even have a stiff neck this morning. We'll see if I'm okay. They hooked me up to the fetal heart monitor, and the heart beats nice and strong and steady, and you know, he probably didn't even notice. I didn't hit the steering wheel or anything like that. Everybody was fine. But, you know, I have to say, at the hospital for like a couple of hours while they check me in at the ER and they do my vital signs and they bring me up to the maternity floor and they do the baby's vital signs. And my dad, who lives half an hour away and had just picked my uncle up from the airport, they come over to the hospital and they wait with me. And my husband, for some reason, gathers my brother-in-law and his father, my father-in-law, and they all get in a car together, and they all drive down toward Boston, and we eventually end up meeting in Manchester, New Hampshire, and doing a prisoner exchange, because apparently I can't drive now. A car that has a scratch on its bumper and a dent on the other bumper, you know, because it's going to be dangerous. And I'm a little frazzled, I appreciate it, but, you know, I have... My brother-in-law's my size, my height, but the rest of them are all 6'2", 3'4", 5". So there's these five men, you know, huge men, and this one woman it takes to, you know, these five men to rescue this poor pregnant damsel in distress who really wasn't in that much distress, but that's okay because they do their hero thing and they take care of me. And I'm thinking, well, at least I got a moment to, like, relax and... You know, sometimes life just makes us stop and makes us calm down from that frenzied motion. But we're always doing that. We're always rushing. I mean, that's the problem with the traffic. You know, if it's the cell phone in one hand and the music on the radio blaring and the fact that everybody has to get to where they're going so quickly that they're all riding with only, you know, a few feet between them so that when something does happen and you do need to stop, you end up all jumbled on top of each other. And that's what happens in our lives sometimes. If we get our stuff so tightly packed together and we're going at such a frantic pace that when we do have to put on the brakes, because sometimes in life you have to put on the brakes, instead of just stopping and pausing and taking a moment, we end up all piled up on top of ourselves, all crumpled up together because we're not anticipating that we're going to stop for breath. We're not anticipating that we're going to need to take a break. We're not anticipating that somebody in front of us might slow down, which means we might need to slow down. We're not anticipating that something's going to happen in our lives that's going to take precedence over the 800 other things that are demanding our attention and make us focus on just being healthy, just taking care of ourselves, just listening. We're not ready to hear a soft whisper or a gentle breeze or hardly a sound or the sound of sheer silence or a still, small voice. We're not listening for those things. And so we don't recognize them. We probably don't even tolerate them. We get uncomfortable with silence, and shouldn't the voice of God make us uncomfortable? Now, I could preach for another 20 minutes about the importance of silence and illustrate in the process the vast scope of human folly. Or I could be silent, and we could take a few moments to listen, to stop, to rest, to hear God's voice, not because it will be sheer silence. We'll hear the fan, thank goodness. We might hear cars go by. We'll hear people sniffle or cough or shuffle their feet. But we might also hear calm and rest and the voice of God reminding us to slow down so we don't get piled up. Let's take a few moments and wait in the quiet. God of the silence and the stillness, in the quiet and the rest, help us to seek and find you there. Help us to take a moment here and there, more often than perhaps we think we need to, more often than surely we would like to or think we have time to. But help us to rest so that we don't get jumbled up. Rest so that we don't hurt ourselves or others. Rest so that we learn to find you not only in the powerful winds or the rampaging earthquakes or the roaring fires, but in the stillness around us. Rest so that we can recognize and even one day tolerate the voice that is silence. Rest so that we can be renewed, so that the concerns and cares and commitments, the ministry and joy and blessing that happen between our breath, between our rest, can be infused with your presence and your purpose. Hear us, we pray, and more importantly, help us hear you, God of silence. Amen.